Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Tuesday morning. It's May 26th. Currently 44 degrees here in Old Town Park City. Again, the forecast today calling for partly cloudy skies, looking for a high today of 70, partly cloudy and 74 tomorrow. And it just gets warmer and drier as the week goes on. Sunshine in 79 on Thursday, up to 84 and mostly sunny on Friday. We could be in again into the mid-80s again for Saturday. Doesn't look like any rain until next week. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Summit County Fire Warden Bryce Boyer, taking a look out at the fire season. Park City Planning Director Bruce Erickson previewing tomorrow's Planning Commission agenda. The Park City Mountain parking lots back on the agenda. And finally, the president and CEO of the Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation, Colin Hilton, with details on the phased reopening of the Utah Olympic Park. Again, a reminder that the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission also meeting tonight to discuss, among other things, the Colby School application. Stay tuned. And stay tuned coming up on This Green Earth. Nell and Chris speaking with a representative from the Coalition for Sensible Safeguards, a nonprofit that is tracking the ongoing repeal of dozens of federal rules and regulations designed to maintain environmental and wildlife safeguards. Well, Park City Council met last week, voting in favor of funding member dues to the Central Wasatch Commission. They also showed support for the historic Main Street Alliance plan to implement car-free Sundays through the summer season and unanimously passed a resolution of making June 2020 Pride Month. KPCW's Carolyn Murray has more on that.
The Park City Historic Preservation Alliance decided, based on a survey of Old Town businesses, they would institute a car-free Main Street on Sundays through the summer season. They hope to start on June 14th. Park City Council may hold a special session the end of this month to allow for more public input. Council member Tim Henney says the resident response in favor of a pedestrian-only Main Street is overwhelming.
Residents seem wildly enthusiastic. I would say as high as 90-95% of the feedback and input and comments that we're getting from residents and citizens is in favor of repurposing Main Street toward more pedestrian activity and more pedestrian friendly. And I'll just kind of leave it at that because, you know, the details need to be worked out. I think that the community wants to have this conversation and wants to be part of a public hearing. So it's important that we notice it, that we put it on the agenda, and that we have a what I would call a full-blown community conversation.
Closing Main Street to cars has been a contentious discussion for years, with businesses in general concerned about the impacts it would have on visitors shopping and dining there. The HPCA survey showed 76% of businesses in favor of car-free Sundays on Main Street. The council has received about 6 emails. Half support closing Main Street to cars, and the other half wants no change. Henney thinks it's important to hear all sides.
I would call a full-blown community conversation with all the stakeholders involved. I think the merchants need to hear from the locals and how the locals feel safe, supporting their businesses and patronizing the businesses on Main Street. We are hearing, aside from that consensus of 76% that were identified in the survey at HPCA, what we are getting in emails is much more on the extreme ends of both ends of the spectrum. The HPCA did request that their membership write emails to the city council. So
staff was instructed to work out details, and a special council meeting will be called based on how quickly they can pull together a detailed plan. In other city business, the council voted unanimously to pay the Central Wasatch Commission $25,000 in membership dues, acknowledging that one of the critical ideals that came out of their 2020 visioning session is to find ways to collaborate regionally. The CWC is an interlocal agency consisting of stakeholders working to preserve the recreation, environment, and economy of the Central Wasatch region. Summit County Councilmember Chris Robinson is the chair of the CWC Executive Board, and Park City Mayor Andy Bierman sits on the board. Henney supports the membership contribution and says even before the COVID-19 economic downturn, they were considering reducing the city's contribution of $100,000 to $25,000.
So we have two seats on the CWC executive board. Summit County authorized $25,000 as their membership contribution. And, you know, this has gone down over the years.
The council voted unanimously to designate June as Pride Month. Rainbow banners will be displayed on Main Street through the month in solidarity with the worldwide movement to acknowledge the contributions and human rights issues the LGBTQ community faces. The intention is to embolden social acceptance and pride rather than stigma for those who identify as LGBTQ. I'm Carolyn Murray, KPCW News.
Well, Summit County has had the highest per capita cases count of COVID-19 for much of the pandemic. As a result, a lot of innovative testing and study is taking place in our community. KPCW's David Boyle has more about that.
One way COVID-19 is being tracked in the community is through a University of Utah, BYU, and Baylor University study of wastewater in the Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District. Summit County Health Director Rich Bulla says while they're not directly involved in the study, they are intrigued by it.
Data and us monitoring and doing surveillance is really important. We need to be able to identify surges in our community, and we need to be able to identify those before individuals start showing up in large numbers at the hospital. The way I'm visualizing this is kind of a multi-tier data approach. And I think utilizing the wastewater as a potential baseline, one point of information, looking at changes over time, because that may help us identify spikes.
Bulla says they're also measuring other data points related to COVID-19 in the community. He says they're doing ongoing sampling and ramping up random sampling and greatly increasing contact tracing.
And so I view this really as kind of the quiver of tools, and we'll use all the information together. And I think the wastewater information is super intriguing. I'm hoping that it more than anything, pun intended here, passes the smell test and helps us know that the rest of our data seem to be right. So I think it's an important part of the package.
Summit County has been hosting another study by the University of Utah. They have been conducting antibody testing. That test can determine whether someone has been exposed to the virus previously. Bulla says they anticipate more information on the pilot program very soon.
We are talking about really when the time might be to ramp up antibody testing for specific groups of individuals, and that's part of our overall strategy, and we've been, of course, consulting with the state to really hone in on what makes sense. The antibody tests are available more widely now. They still have issues. There's generally high variability among them with respect to results.
Bulla adds that like other decisions regarding the pandemic, the county and its restriction level will continue to be driven by data. I'm David Boyle, KPCW News.
KPCW News time now, 8:15. Good morning. Well, the latest proposal for the Colby School site returns to the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission tonight for a virtual public hearing and a possible decision. KPCW's Rick Bruff reports the Planning Commission will also discuss a proposed amendment that could change the colony development.
The Snyderville Commission convenes starting at 4:30. The Colby applicants are seeking a conditional use permit to renovate the main building for 8 guest rooms, 1 owner residence, and a kitchen. The structure was approved in 1985 as the Snowed Inn, a small hotel with a restaurant. It was the Colby School from the year 2000 to 2008. In 2017, the proposal for a multi-use expansion project got an approval from the Snyderville Commission, but neighbors appealed to the county council, which denied the permit in April of 2018. The new proposal does not ask for any expansion of existing buildings or for new structures. The existing barn and accessory buildings will continue hosting a Pilates fitness studio that was approved 4 years ago. The planning staff is recommending approval, saying the use is consistent with the Snyderville general plan. The Snyderville Commission discussed the project in March, and critics then expressed concern about weddings or other events being allowed on site. According to this week's staff report, the applicant's representative said they're just applying for a bed and breakfast inn, and if they wanted anything further, they would seek a special events permit as required in the county code. The staff proposes several conditions to reduce impacts, including compliance with a specific landscape plan and lighting plan. Outdoor activities are directed to end by 9 p.m., and garbage collection is prohibited between 9 p.m. and 7 a.m. Another issue was defining who would occupy the owner residence. In the end, the staff is recommending that before a business license is given to the project, that occupant has to show that they have a deeded ownership interest in the property. Later on the agenda, the Snyderville Commission will talk in work session about a request to add non-residential development to the colony located up White Pine Canyon Road. The colony was approved as part of the Canyons Resort Plan in the late 90s and was ultimately allowed 274 residential units. Representatives for the developer and the colony's HOA are asking to amend its SPA plan and development agreement to allow for 135,000 square feet. The requested uses would range from maintenance facilities to a private HOA lodge, which would include dining, tennis courts, a pool, and other amenities. The applicants say the additional uses will be for residents of the colony, and they will not have facilities that are open to the public. They also say the maintenance facilities on site will help to decrease traffic to the neighborhood. The county's website notice for Snyderville Planning has details on how citizens can listen in or participate in this virtual meeting. For KPCW, I'm Rick Broth.
We're still waiting to hear from Bryce Boyer, so as soon as we hear from him, we'll get him on the line. Well, with Wasatch and Summit counties moving from an orange to yellow risk last week, the change will affect the state liquor stores in the two counties. Both Summit and Wasatch counties are now considered to be at low risk based on the state's COVID-19 assessment, and businesses are slowly opening. According to Department of Alcoholic Beverage Control spokesman Terry Wood, the color change will affect the four state liquor stores in the Park City area and Heber City. Wood says they're working with managers of the stores to increase the numbers of customers who are allowed in the stores at any one time. That number, he says, will be based on the size of the store. Other precautions will remain in place for now, including the sanitizing of the shopping carts, checkout counters, and card readers. Residents are reminded to follow the precautions of social distancing, washing their hands, and wearing a mask in public. More changes, says Wood, will come as the state risk status for COVID-19 evolves. While it is not summer yet officially, the hot, dry weather forecast for this week will make it seem like it is. On the phone with some fire prevention tips, I have Summit County Fire Warden Bryce Boyer. Good morning, Bryce.
Good morning.
So are we officially in wildfire season?
Officially, it starts June 1, but we've already been seeing fires with people doing prescribed burning or pile burning in their yard waste and that kind of stuff, and with the winds and so on, had several small fires already this year.
Okay. At this point, not a problem, but what's the outlook then for the wildfire season?
Right now, the predictive services are looking at about an average season, which means we'll see fires, but probably not larger ones. For residents that have been around for a while, I don't expect to see a Rockport-type fire or anything, but we could see some other smaller fires, short duration in time, with wind events coinciding with a start. The biggest thing would be to remind folks that this would be a good time to be doing your yard waste or yard defensible space, looking at the structure hardening on your homes and stuff while we're in this COVID stuff period where you're spending more time at home and so on. Maybe get some of that yard work, trimmings and stuff done. Burning will end on June 1. Those permits for right now, from now until June 1st, are available at summitcounty.org/firewarden, and then down in the page there it'll say open burn application. Okay. Something residents need, even with that permit, you still need to be following your homeowner association rules or city regulations as well. If they ban it, then I would not recommend doing it. You could still see a citation from those local entities.
Okay. So besides the defensible space, I mean, what else can people do to protect their property?
The structure hardening, which is making sure that, you know, you don't have excess of leaves and stuff in corners around your home. Cracks and crevices are sealed either with caulking, making sure decks and wood areas are stained or painted, not bare wood. They're less likely to receive embers and start. Making sure that any vents, either in the foundation or crawl spaces or attic areas, dryer vents and that kind of stuff, have screening over them where embers, to prevent embers from being blown in. And there's information on that as well at the stomachcounty.org/firewarden and or on FireWise.
Okay. So in terms of your staff, I mean, what have they been doing during this this spring, just given the COVID regulations?
So we've been doing a lot of trying to work with doing education, training, virtually with fire department folks, online trainings of wildland, updating that, getting them ready for the new season. The last couple weeks, as it stayed warmer over evenings, it's putting apparatuses back into service, filling them, going through, checking pumps and all of that for making sure that everything's up and in service for when we do have fires for responses.
Okay. And basically fire season lasts, what, through September?
September, October. Mm-hmm. The last couple of years, it's actually run into the first part of November when we started seeing snow.
Okay. Of course, we've got more people out camping as well. And as you will recall, I think it was the Box Canyon fire that was determined to be human-caused. It was a campfire, I think, that was not put out correctly. So what do campers need to know about having a campfire?
Make sure that they're in secure rings or secured areas. Debris around the fire is taken, removed. And when you're leaving, anytime you're going to leave your campsite and so on, making sure that the fire is out, cold to the touch. So, you know, put water on it, stir it, put water on it, stir it, and then put your hand in on it and so on, and make sure that all of the heat has been removed. Otherwise, particularly in the remote sites, if you leave any kind of heat or don't mix the water in, it'll continue to sit in the smaller, get down into the root systems, and then they tend to become much larger. So making sure that they're cold out when you leave, even if you're going out to go hiking, don't leave it fit in a campsite. Make sure it's cold out before you leave to go do your hike.
Okay, and I know it's kind of early, but any word with regard to fireworks and maybe your forecast for whether or not those happen this year?
At this point, I'm not hearing or seeing anything on that. That'll have to be as we get a little closer and evaluate the science behind it or the weather and what we're seeing in fuel moisture and what kind of precip and so on we have between now and then.
Okay, and is that the county's call, or does word have to come down from the state?
It's a mutual discussion, so we talk with the county, cities, through the fire warden program with the state forester, but ultimately, on the county side, it is designated by the state forester in conjunction with input from the counties. Cities still have the authority to make those decisions and enact those type of restrictions on their own.
Okay. Hey, anything else you wanted to let us know about, Bryce?
If people would just remember to, you know, be safe. If it's windy, don't be burning. Make sure you do your permits. After June 1, the permits are done through my office here in county. and those are done Monday through Thursday. If you're looking at burning over the weekend, make sure you get a hold of me by Wednesday. We issue them on Thursday as we are off duty on Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So we try and get around on Thursday and get those issued so that people can still do the burning and so on, and making sure that they call the county sheriff's dispatch non-emergency number, which is provided on the permit when it's issued, prior to burning, and then when their fire is done and cold out.
Okay, I appreciate the good information. Bryce Boyer is Summit County's fire warden. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you, and have a good day.
KPCW News Time now, 8:29. Coming up, we'll be checking in with Park City Planning Director Bruce Erickson, and later on in the hour, conversation with the president and CEO of the Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation, Colin Hilton, talking a little bit about the phased reopening of the Utah Olympic Park. Well, the Park City Planning Commission meeting electronically tomorrow starting at 5:30. On the phone with a preview, I have Park City Planning Director Bruce Erickson. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning, Leslie.
So the meeting information will be online, parkcity.org. People are told to find the Listen Live link that's found on the website there in the upper left corner. Let's start first before the agenda, just finding out what kind of applications you've seen come through your planning window.
You know, I think on a gross level, a lot of our applications are people wanting to grow their newly purchased homes. They want to expand decks. They want to expand living area. For whatever reason, you know, whatever they bought wants to get bigger. We do have a couple of bigger applications coming through. The B2E parcel, which is adjacent to the Empire Lodge, is being discussed at this point. We've got the base area, Park City Mountain Resort, of course, and the Huntsman property. But, you know, individual homeowners just want to keep growing their property because property is valued at square footage. And so if they can increase their square footage, they can increase their property value.
Okay. Let's talk in work session. Planning Commission will discuss the Recreation Advisory Park Board Parks Preservation Urban Park Zone. What are we talking about here?
Well, there wants to be the Recreation Advisory Board wants to try and put sort of a halfway point in the open space regulations. So it's Rotary Park, Creekside Park, which is by the fire station in Park Meadows, Prospector Park, City Park, and the golf course. They want to put sort of an intermediate level of control on the property. So it's not complete preservation that you can't use it, but they're afraid of potential development opportunities on the property that even the city might move forward. So it lives somewhere between recreation open space and preserved open space. Tate Shaw, the project manager for recreation, has done a great job in putting a staff report together, and the Recreation Advisory Board has spent a year trying to figure it out. I don't think I've got any sort of issues with doing this kind of a thing. We may need to have a conversation on the municipal golf course because of the water treatment plant on the north side of the golf course and because of the potential roadway improvements required by Park City Mountain Resort on the south side of the golf course. But I think we can work this out.
All right. Well, let's talk about the work session then with regard to the Park City Mountain Resort base parking lots. Commissioners will meet and discuss the applicant, that's PEG's, request to amend the 1998 development agreement. So it looked like there were a number of reasons that they're asking to amend, but I think the issue for the Planning Commission is whether or not to amend the development agreement. Is that sufficient, or does a proposed new master plan study require a new MPD?
Well, I think that's exactly the question, Leslie. You've hit the nail on the head. The major distinction between the 98 agreement and the current request is that the 97-98 agreement, the 2007 annexation, the Woodward work in 2014 and the 2015 gondola work all assumed that the base area, the base area would be developed as a single entity. And now PEG and the resort are talking about severing the responsibilities for the base area development and the parking garages. So that's the basis of Planner and us work for this first meeting, is to say, how the hell do we deal with this? You know, we've got X amount of parking that's the responsibility of the resort. Much of the traffic inbound and outbound at the resort is the responsibility of the ski area. So who's going to take responsibility in the long run on how we handle those things? The other one is, who's going to take responsibility for the affordable housing requirements that are in the original development agreement, plus affordable housing requirements going forward?
So what are they proposing?
Right now, they're proposing to meet their 80-bed requirement from the original development agreement. They are 23 beds in arrears from doing the Marriott Mountainside project, and they have not delivered those 23 units.
But again, are we talking Vail Resorts or PEG here? I guess that's what I was...
Exactly. Exactly, Leslie. You've hit the nail on the head again. PEG is picking up the responsibility for the employee housing requirements for the 80 beds in the development agreement, and they're talking about putting them around the parking garage on the main parking area, which is between Manor Way, Lowell, and Empire.
Okay, and then so they're saying Vail Resorts is responsible for the 23 that they're in arrears. And then what about the parking spaces? What is PEG saying that it'll provide, and what is Vail Resorts liable for?
Well, exactly. Again, right now the development agreement requires them to replace approximately 1,200 surface parking stalls with 1,200 parking spaces when they're done with the project, plus the amount of parking spaces required for the condominium and hotel project that PEG is developing. It also requires 600 additional parking spaces if the ski area wants to expand from its current position, so that it would bring it to 1,800 parking spaces that they need to provide, plus the parking spaces for the ski area. We're trying to work our way through that and figure out what exactly the right number is on how many parking spaces need to be provided. For the purposes of the public, we're struggling a little bit with structured parking, because if you had a ski box on the top of your F-250 Ford pickup, you're not going to be able to get into a 7-foot high entrance garage, and you're going to need a place to park. If you're a Sprinter van owner, you're not going to be able to get into the parking garage, and we need to figure out how to sort that out. The one big situation that we're trying to deal with is that a lot of the services to Park City Mountain Resort come by shuttle services, and you'll see them coming in from the county. You'll see them coming in from Montage. You'll see them coming in from Empire Pass, and in the current plan, there's no drop-off area for those folks to kind of get out of their car, out of the van, and move to the resort. They are proposing some additional ski lockers and some of the other things that folks have asked for.
But, but it sounds like they've run out of real estate, or at least surface real estate. So does that require then taller buildings? Taller parking structures?
Yeah. But not necessarily taller than what was approved in 97-98. We're still working through the height of the buildings right now. The Marriott Mountain side is the better part of 105 feet tall. They've proposed some buildings that could be measured at on the order of 80 feet tall. The biggest difference is that their proposal is that the parking garages are above grade and then wrapped with housing instead of being below grade. So we're trying to figure out how to measure that.
Does that then create a canyon sort of effect for the businesses there around the ice rink?
Yeah, help me with that one.
When you get big, tall buildings there that are going to overshadow the smaller buildings, the 1-2-story buildings that are already there, I mean, do we now create some kind of, you know, what we see on Lower Main Street?
You mean the Marriott and that sort of stuff?
Yeah.
It's possible. I don't think we know enough about what we're doing on that. We're still trying to figure out what this thing is and how to regulate it.
All right. What about this Parcel C, shifting density? And Parcel C is prohibited, but that's where they want to expand to? Tell me about that.
Well, no, the development agreement does not allow moving density between parcels. We're not afraid of changing the development agreement to allow shifting density between development parcels. So that's really not an issue for us right now. It may be for the Planning Commission when they get a chance to look at it, but I think it's more about site design. I think it's more about architecture. I think it's more about trying to deliver the right amount of parking.
Quickly, let's see. Huntsman Estates is back. Currently, there's one home on more than 40 acres. It's been for sale by years. No takers so far. So the plan now is to try and subdivide it?
Yeah. Inside the Deer Valley Development Agreement, there are some rights to subdivide that parcel into 15 lots, one of which would be the existing Huntsman House. So that's inside the development agreement already with Deer Valley. Excuse me. So they're proposing to meet their vested rights under the development agreement to subdivide into 14 roughly acre lots. And it would be generally consistent with Beltaire and the American flag lot size. There is some hard conversation about whether or not we should be restricting house size on those lots. The 16th lot that you see in the staff report is actually an open space lot. There are no trails that are currently authorized through this property, but the additional 20 acres below Huntsman that we're having a conversation about have a bunch of trails on them. So we've got some hard conversations coming with the Planning Commission.
All right. Now, originally in 82, the property was subdivided into 34 lots. That changed in 87 when Huntsman's purchased the property. Can they ever get those 34 lots back again?
They can fight about it, but not likely.
Okay. And again, this 20-acre parcel that you're saying is outside of the Deer Valley Master Plan, that's what they're talking about, just a single lot there?
There are provisions, excuse me, for two lots from the 20-acre parcel to go inside the Deer Valley Master Plan, but that would require an amendment to the Deer Valley Master Plan at this point.
All right. And then the trails that do run through that property, they're actually on private property, or was there some easement that was acquired for the trails?
No, they're running through private property.
Okay, so they shouldn't be there anyway, unless there was some allowance for them, huh?
Well, either that or we need to clear up the rights to that property. I mean, if you fell off your bike on one of those trails on private property that was not on an easement, the liability would go to the property owner.
Okay, and then you mentioned the B2E lot there at Empire Lodge. That's not on the agenda?
It's not on the agenda. It's just coming through the cycle. of things that we've got to do. We're doing a lot of land management code adjustments right now. We've got a bunch of other things on our plate right now, but that's a big project that's going to come through and kind of affect our workload.
Okay.
It's the big hole in the ground right next to where the Empire Lodge lives, up in Deer Valley Empire Pass.
Okay. Is this where we're talking about the ski run coming through and such?
Yeah, well, the ski run's already there. B2E sort of lives on the edge of that ski run, and then you ski down to the Empire Lodge, and then you do whatever you do for lunch.
Okay. All right, anything else you wanted to mention?
Yeah, I just want to let the public know real quickly that, you know, the Park City Mountain Resort project is not legislative, it's administrative, and so the city councilors and the planning commissioners are not going to be able to respond to questions that you have when you're in the grocery store. Because it's administrative, the city council is going to be the appeal authority if the planning commission makes a decision and somebody appeals it. So the city council is not going to be able to respond. The planning commission should not be responding to your comments. You can submit your comments online, and we'll make sure they get published during the Planning Commission meeting.
Okay. Hey, Bruce, thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks, Leslie. Appreciate it.
That's Park City Planning Director Bruce Erickson, and you're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. It's 8:45. KPCW News Time now, 8:46. Good morning. Well, in COVID-19 hotspots across the U.S., reports of an inflammatory disease infecting children has put some parents on alert. KPCW's David Boyle reports that there are no confirmed cases of this disease here in Summit County.
National reports of a mysterious inflammatory syndrome affecting children is suspected to be related to COVID-19. While national experts are starting to learn more about the syndrome, Summit County Health Director Rich Bulla says they haven't had any confirmed reports of the syndrome in Summit County.
It's a pretty horrifying potential outcome of this disease, and I think that should remind us that while there's still a perception among a lot of people that this stuff isn't bad, it is very dangerous, and we need to take precautions to protect ourselves and others. Again, I don't know if we've had any cases in Summit County.
Preventing spread of the disease among children is incredibly difficult. Bulla explains that it is not recommended for children to wear masks.
The masks don't fit them. Also, they tend to touch the masks a lot, and they aren't washing their hands as often as an adult should. So if they're touching areas that are dirty and they're reaching up and touching their face, there is some evidence that there's actually an increased risk of disease transmission.
Despite all that, if Utah stays in the yellow low-risk phase, parents can expect their children to return to school this fall.
It doesn't say how they're going to open, and I don't have any inside information related to that. There are schools that are very, very large across our state, across our country, and I have a hard time seeing business as usual. I have a hard time seeing close to 1,000 kids gathering in a lunchroom and sitting in close proximity to each other. Again, they are forecast to open, but I don't know what those guidelines are going to be. And of course, we don't know where we're going to be with respect to COVID-19 when the school year approaches.
While schools will remain closed for the conclusion of this academic year, it is expected that driver's ed courses and summer school will be available as well in the yellow phase. I'm David Boyle, KPCW News.
KPCW News Time now, 8:48. Well, as cases of COVID-19 are diagnosed, contact tracing efforts are increasing at public health agencies. Summit County has dedicated resources towards tracing with a small team led by Nursing Director Carolyn Rose. KPCW's Carolyn Murray has the latest about how Summit County public health officials are monitoring the spread of the virus.
When a person tests positive for COVID-19, the testing site workers ask the patient and others in their household to isolate until they get the results, which is usually between 24 to 48 hours. Once a positive result is known, Summit County Nursing Director Carolyn Rose says that's when they get to work on contact tracing. They're looking for personal close contacts within the past 2 days of the positive test case.
It's not just talking with somebody as you walk by them in the hallway. It's spending at least 10 minutes with that person, and you are within 6 feet of the infected person.
As more COVID-19 data becomes available, guidelines for managing the illness change. And Rose says, as of now, if a person is quarantined because they've had contact with a positive case, they can get tested after 7 to 10 days. But she says they still must remain quarantined for the entire 14 days because they can still become symptomatic. The Utah Department of Health provides resources to assist Summit County in contact tracing because it is extremely labor-intensive. Additionally, Rose says the Summit County Health Department implemented source contact tracing a couple of weeks ago. This requires going back in time to identify contacts from 7 days ago.
Those people are then notified and they are suggested to go and get a COVID test, so the nasal swab. But they are, the Utah Department of Health does that for me, and the Utah Department of Health will send them a text message or an email stating that they can go in and get tested.
Rose says there is a confidential disease reporting and surveillance system that requires labs and physicians to report some 70 diseases to the state health department. When a COVID-19 test is completed at the lab, it is immediately routed to local health authorities.
Sometimes we get a lab report before the doctor gets it. So, but with COVID, it's 24 to 48 hours usually. It's whenever the lab test is done, then the labs have it automated that it goes confidentially via electronic lab reporting to the EpiTrack system at the state health department.
Rose says they use a couple of different methods to provide continuous follow-up on patients who are being tracked.
So one of them is a daily phone call, and the other one is through a system that's on their phone. It sends them a text message every day asking them if they have symptoms. If they say no, that's done for the day. If they say yes, somehow it notifies somebody at the health department to call. Or if the local health department is following up, they would notify us.
Rose says people continue to test positive for COVID-19 3 to 4 weeks out, long after symptoms disappear. She explains the guidelines for releasing people with symptoms from isolation.
They have to have had the 3 previous days where they are fever-free, and on the 10th day, their symptoms have to be less than they have been. And they don't have to have a negative test to get out of isolation. They have to reach that day 10 with having no fever for the previous 3 days, and their symptoms are less than what they have.
Rose says Summit County currently has 43 active cases, with an estimate that 360 people have recovered. She says most recovered in 21 days. KPCW has reported on the COVID-19 Summit County antibody pilot testing program going on currently. Rose warns those who have tested positive with antibodies must not consider themselves immune to contracting the novel coronavirus. I'm Carolyn Murray, KPCW News.
It's 8:54 now. Good morning. Well, last week, Park City Chamber Bureau President Bill Malone presented a plan to the Summit County Council to begin marketing our area to prospective visitors. And the CEO of Vail Resorts, Rob Katz, also announced the company plans to have all of its resorts open by July. With the county now in the so-called low-risk phase of getting to a new normal to begin rebuilding the economy, Summit County health officials remain cautiously optimistic we can stay there in spite of the increased tourism. Chamber Bureau President Bill Malone told the county council that research shows that people are not comfortable getting on a plane just yet, so they will be focusing their efforts on markets that are within a day's drive of Park City. Summit County Health Director Rich Bolo is hopeful we can maintain our positive trend with the COVID-19 cases. While Bolo is not a fan of the name of the yellow phase low risk because he believes we are still at significant risk, he says the Chamber Bureau's approach to bringing back tourism makes sense.
Part of that is economic, but part of it is, of course, is just trying to be protective. In Utah, we're tending to do pretty well, actually. If you look at our COVID numbers, things look quite good.
And he expects that hot spots will flare up. Right now, Salt Lake City's still in orange, and he says we need to watch things like that, especially in the smaller communities.
I worry about, you know, some of the smaller communities in our county who have been fortunate to not be real severely impacted by COVID-19. You know, that can change in a heartbeat. If one event is held that has a person or multiple people who are infected, all of a sudden, these small communities are finding this in a growing incidence in their homes and communities. So I do worry about it.
Perhaps even a bigger challenge, though, he says, is getting people to engage in the economy.
Things have changed, and we've all gotten a little bit used to doing less interaction with our economy. And I think gradually that needs to change.
Last week, Woodward Park City announced that it planned to reopen for the Memorial Day weekend. And Vail Resort CEO Rob Katz sent an email to employees telling them that while the company intends to take its time to reopen, the hope is to have the lifts turning at all of the resorts by late June or early July. Bulla believes that is doable. The data, he says, is clear that being outdoors, the risks of COVID are mitigated. It's indoors where the disease is spread easily.
There are ways to mitigate the risk. And that's what they're focused on. The data are becoming quite clear on how they can do that, and I'm confident that they can do it. It won't be business as usual, I don't think. There'll be some tweaks, but I feel quite good about where we are right now.
That's Summit County Health Director Rich Bulla. He added that the resorts have been great partners and very responsible. Well, during last week's meeting, the Park City Council heard more details on cutting $8.6 million from the 2021 budget. Park City operating budget discussions outline specific ways that they plan to respond to the loss of sales tax revenues. It's a first ever provisional bullet for the city, which means that they will be reviewing it again in the next 60 to 90 days. March sales tax numbers came in at about $200,000 above the projected revenues. The staff showed council data from a Google mobility tracking model, which helps to predict sales tax revenues. Park City Council member Tim Henney says that the data trends from the model appear favorable.
And it shows people's behavior, their travel behavior, which is a way of giving us some good data on our assumptions regarding sales tax and where people are going and what they're doing. They could actually see people going to the grocery store, and they could even break out retail store visits. Assumptions at this point are tracking pretty well. In fact, we are a little more pessimistic in some of our basic assumptions on sales tax than what this mobility tracker was indicating.
Since large events have been canceled, seasonal hiring isn't anticipated. Deferral of some capital projects will also help make up the revenue losses. There are a couple of projects slated, though, to continue this summer.
This big water line that's going on along 248 as you're leaving town, you know, that's good that that's happening now. The Three Kings water treatment, that's good that it's happening now, just because, you know, there's less activity on the roads in general and less congestion. So we are benefiting in some respects. And then, you know, we also have some plans this summer for some improvements on Lower Park Avenue and turning the corner on 248 on Kearns that could benefit as well.
Operational cuts of about $5.5 million will come from a reduction in the transit service. He says they are still able to meet the baseline service needs.
And we are thinking that during the summer, we will simply go back to our off-season level of service. And all of that, you know, costs less and requires fewer drivers. Part of it is less service at the county, so they get charged less. Part of it is less revenue coming in, and a lot of it is just less required or need for service.
The city will continue to take input on the provisional budget. Budget manager Jed Brigg plans to have the final budget to council by June 18th, with the caveat that it will be revisited later this summer for possible adjustments due to the COVID-19 impact, financial impacts. It's 9 o'clock. We're up to 50 degrees already here in Old Town Park City. Forecast today again, calling for some clouds, looking for a high today of about 70. Partly cloudy tomorrow, 74 with an overnight low of 45 tonight. Sunny and 79 on Thursday, 84 by Friday. Partly cloudy on Saturday again with a high of 83. And it doesn't look like any rain in sight until sometime next week. You've been listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW Park City. Stay tuned now for headline news from NPR. Than This Green Earth. It's KPCW, Park City.